Welcome to the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota. This is arts and cultural heritage producer Jeff Carmack, and in today's episode, we're talking about revolution, or more specifically, the revolutionists, a play being performed in the arena stage at St. Cloud State University's Performing Arts Center, beginning Wednesday, October 17th, and running through Sunday, October 21st. The Revolutionists was written by Lauren Gunderson back in 2016 and takes place during the French Revolution and the Reign of Terror. It's about feminism, freedom, and the eerie way that history tends to repeat itself. But we'll get to all that after I welcome my guests to the studio. We got three students, Nicole Cotilla, Randy LeBeau, Jessica Peters, all student actors in the play, and their faculty counterpart, Carol Cooley. So everyone, why don't we go around and we can introduce ourselves, and what do you do with the Revolutionists?
I'm Carol Cooley. I'm the director, the costume and scene designer, and like kind of builder, yeah.
I am Jessica Peters, and I play Olam de Gouge in this show.
My name is Randy LeBeau, and I am the stage manager for the show.
And my name's Nicole Cotilla, and I play Marie Antoinette.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm very excited to see this. It starts October 17th and runs through the 21st.
Correct.
Sunday the 21st, 2 o'clock matinee on the 21st.
And 7:30 start time. From Wednesday through Saturday.
Of course, yes. Which is, you know, when people do plays and whatnot around here. So it's at the Arena Stage, St. Cloud State's Performing Arts Center. And, well, tell me a little bit about this. This is set during the French Revolution, or right after the French Revolution, if you will.
Well, during the Reign of Terror.
Yeah.
The bloodiest part, the part that most people think about is the French Revolution. Those Jacobins. And the characters are all historical personages, except for one, Marianne, who isn't with us today. Mm-mm. And she represents that sort of the French ideal of liberty at the time. And she's a composite character created by Lauren Gunderson, the playwright. I love that there's a wonderful Tumblr dramaturgical website. And Gunderson basically says, yeah, I did my homework and I made her up. Because nobody wrote her down. And that's one of the lines in the play about her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is, she's what, Haitian? Is that who that was?
Saint-Domingue.
That character, yeah.
So what becomes Haiti.
Gotcha. Right on. So yeah, this is a time where, yeah, a lot of those names weren't written down.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot. There's some within history that, yes, we do know, but probably much more that we don't.
And even Olam de Gouge. I mean, most mm-hmm. people have no idea that this woman existed and how important she is to us now, even.
Well, why don't we jump into that? Why don't you describe your character and why your character is important?
Well, my character is Olam de Gouge, and she is a playwright and activist. She wrote the Declaration for the Rights of Women. A lot of people like regard her as like the first feminist because she spoke out against, you know, patriarchy and just wanted to make sure that women's voices were heard as well as the men's during this revolution.
Yeah, well, that's kind of, we use that term patriarchy now, and, you know, that means different things to different people, but had this been a concept before? Somehow, I don't know if it has been.
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah, this idea of, well, there's a thing I like to say, which, you know, feminism is the radical idea that women are people, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you think about that, you know, and it's just, we do come out of a culture that is... well, patriarchal. You know, we're kind of stuck with that word there. But, yeah, it's a strange thing, and it just that makes this play timely.
And women at the time, they were taking this seriously. Liberty, equality, and so liberté, égalité, fraternité. And Olam stands up and says, how about sororité? You know, and really it comes down to, I don't know what the person and personité, but anyway... because for the first time, women could conceive that they were equal up to the point where Olam's killed. I mean, it's fascinating because women's created clubs and salons, not just to talk about philosophy, but to really talk about how to make this revolution happen and make it, like, basically make it right for everybody.
Well, now just let's back up just a little bit more and just talk about the revolution itself. Why did the French Revolution happen?
And they look at me. A lot of the reasons that unrest is happening today.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of wealth being accumulated by a very few amount of people.
Yeah.
And they're totally disconnected with the mass of the public. You know, the famous line, let them eat cake. You know, this is coming from that. And it has nothing to do with, you know, this isn't a sheet cake. This isn't, you know, angel food cake. This is something else. And, you know, it's just it's an expression of go ahead and suffer. I don't care.
You know, Marie Antoinette never said that line, though.
Really?
She never really said that. It's often tied to her because she's one of the most famous French figureheads. And, I mean, she was the easiest target of all of the royalty there. I mean, history tells us to laugh at her, and we do. But she never actually said that. In fact, it's speculated that that line actually came, I think, almost years before she even said it. It was by another, I don't quite remember who says it exactly, but it was tied to her because she's the only name we really remember. So we're just like, yeah, she probably said that. She said a lot of other dumb stuff, too. Because, you know, she's out of touch with reality, and, you know, they called her names, so many names, that she, some of them she deserved, some of them she did not, but overall, during the French Revolution, we were definitely told to hate her, but the thing about this play is that you learn much more about Marie Antoinette and her softer side, and her more empathetic side, her, you know, her family life. You really get a chance to empathize with her. And it wasn't a thing to empathize with that queen until long after her execution. It was, I mean, her body and the other royals at the time were just dumped by a gravesite before they were actually issued their proper royal burial. Years after they were dead, they were given their proper reburial. Yes.
So it's almost like kind of a meme, if you will. Somebody says something and it kind of travels around.
Yeah.
And then years later, people are like, oh, Marie Antoinette said, let them eat cake.
Yeah, yeah. It's just a very, very popular misconception. And for some reason, it's tied to her. But she actually did not say anything remotely close to that. But she's also, I mean, if you were to look at the propaganda against Marie Antoinette at the time as well, it would be a very easy thing for you to tie, you know, any other, what am I trying to say here? She was very easy to hate. And they depicted just absolutely cruel, lewd drawings of her and Marquise de Lafayette and her children, absolutely ridiculous slander and libel against Marie.
Kind of feels like today.
Why was she so under fire? Exactly.
Totally. So this play, when was this play written? This is relatively new, isn't it?
It's in 2016.
Okay.
2 years ago.
Yeah, yeah, right on.
Yeah, Lauren Gunderson's she stepped into the number two spot this year, but last year she was the most produced playwright in the country besides Shakespeare.
Wow.
And she's, I forget her age, she's relatively young, and she purposely has been writing political plays as well as other work. Ashlyn just produced, Shakespeare just produced Book of Will, another sort of looking at William Shakespeare's life that she created. She's fascinated with women in history, and so there's, I can't remember the titles right now, but there's a piece about a woman astronomer and a female physicist, and she just sort of follows those, and she said she was in Paris, I think with her mother, and on a trip, And somehow Alam de Gouge sort of entered the scene, and she's like, I have to write a play. And she wrote most of this one. She was on that vacation in Paris.
Hmm. Interesting.
Eating macaroons.
Nice. Well, it is kind of interesting, the cyclical nature of this, of these things. You know, this has happened before, and maybe, hopefully, it doesn't happen again, or maybe it does happen again. I don't, you know, and you know, this goes all the way back to Plato, and you know how they saw how these things worked out when you start accumulating too much wealth, and then you start getting these divides, then you start villainizing people, and and you know, it's not really the people; it's maybe the ideas that they have, and. Where do we go with that?
We have to blame somebody for the problems in our country. And it's very easy to look at political figureheads and point the blame at them when really it's a systematic oppression that is enabled by the people in their positions of power, but it's so much more than the people themselves.
Mm-hmm.
We have to rethink our politics, like, almost altogether.
And one of the things fascinating that really kicks off, I mean, the storming of the Bastille starts the French Revolution. However, what really moves it into high gear and what really starts to change everything was there was a women's march. They marched from Paris to Versailles. They tore the gates off of Versailles. They killed the guards. And they basically stormed that palace. I mean, Marie was in her nightclothes, and she ran down to the king's chamber, and nobody was going to let her in, you know, until finally somebody realized it was her. And just that, and probably the reason why Louis signed the Declaration of the Rights of Man was based on the Women's March. And these were like everyday working women. They were the fish sellers. They were the bakers, the women that basically did commerce in Paris. And a lot of it was that the aristocracy was withholding, they were hoarding grain and flour. And so there's no bread. And so the women just went, I can do something about it. You want to drag that cannon along with me?
Just go kill him.
Well, yeah.
It got to that point with them.
Yeah, it did.
It did. And, you know, it's like that polarization. And it's kind of like, well, why did the aristocracy do that? Didn't they understand what was going to happen? And probably not. Or, you know, what are their motivations? What are anybody's motivations when it, like, is just resting on greed?
Yeah, when the divide between have and have not becomes so egregiously large, something has to happen.
Yeah, because people are people. People are human.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you see this human over there is making all these humans suffer because they're greedy. Well, let's just go take it. Let's go take it back.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, that is that cyclical thing that keeps happening. Mm-hmm. And it's not pleasant when people go and take it back.
Nope.
But it seems to be what happens. So you're in tune to 88.1 FM KVSC and the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota. And today we're talking about The Revolutionists. It's a play being put on St. Cloud State University on the Arena Stage Wednesday, October 17th through Sunday, the 21st. We've got actors Jessica Peters, Nicole Cotilla, stage manager Randy LeBeau, and director and costume designer and SCSU faculty Carol Cooley. And as we get back into it, I'm going to talk about some interesting details about the stage itself.
So the show is really kind of an interesting, it's set up in the round. So that means like there are seats on all four sides of the thing. So the action takes place right in the middle. So that's really kind of cool. You get some interesting views of like maybe like the back of actors and like, I don't know, it's an interesting way to look at it. Something you don't normally see very often. Also, something kind of cool, in each of the corners, we've got giant guillotines. Well, we won't say exactly what those do. You guys will have to come see the show and see that, but it's a little spooky, that's for sure. But yeah, it's really good. I think, yeah.
Good.
Stage management. I don't do the talky bits.
You're the
talky bits.
This is all about the talky bits.
It's definitely a behind the scenes kind of.
Yeah. She does great at it, though.
She's fantastic. But yeah, the stage is in a round. It's really interesting. This is my first time working in a round. I've done a thrust stage where it's like three sides, you know, your front and then left, right, our audience, and then the back is obviously the wall. But it'll be interesting because this is a really new kind of thing for me, and you really do have to, like, think a lot about your movement and where you're facing, so, you know, you're not blocking audience's sight through, you know, say you're, like, standing in front of another actor and, like, they're gonna miss that expression they just made, or, you know, you gotta really be playing to every corner and every seat in the room because you want to make sure that everybody can see what's happening. But it's also just an interesting art form because, you know, you're constantly kind of moving to get that impression.
Yeah, you just got to be kind of mindful that instead of just one audience, there's three.
Yeah, it's definitely
four.
Immersive.
Four.
Oh, four, right, audiences. Yes. Four. Right, that on a thrust, there's three, but
round.
The round is four. Yeah.
And the other part that's really, I think, delightful in this piece is that it's meta-theatrical. It references theater constantly. You can say it.
Meta-theater. The point is to be a little confusing.
Well, that is, you know, the point of theater. You know, it kind of goes back to it, you know. I mean, just, well, pretty much everything that goes on St. Cloud State Theater Department, yeah, it's theater. I mean, it's like stating the obvious, but, you know, let's get into what is theater? What is its purpose? And, you know, this is a very timely thing, and to be able to express the importance of these concepts is important. Mm-hmm. And to be able to, you know, take somebody, not necessarily to the French Revolution, but to, well, what's going on today?
Exactly.
How are things similar? How are things different? Where are we going? Yeah, you know, that's that.
And why isn't it a beach?
Exactly.
It's a line.
There we go. Well,
Theater
is democracy. Mm-hmm. Pretty democracy with great hats.
Right. I mean, realistically, though, like, theater is incredibly political. This play is definitely political, but, I mean, theater as a whole is one of the best medias to translate your thoughts and to put that into political action because you're really giving the audience a point of view from, you know, what you would like to convey through your art. So it's a good outlet. Political expression.
We'll shift gears just a little bit. What got you all into theater? How did you find your way here?
Well, I'm full of myself, so no. I guess while I'm already talking, I'll just start. I love theater because it brought me out of my shell. I never really felt like I fit in, but once I started doing theater, it was amazing how a cast can, like, just come together and meet every night, and there's some outrageous bonding that happens because when you're in a rehearsal, all judgment lies at the door, it's left at the door, it's a safe space, it's, you know, you're allowed to express yourself however you want, and you're expected to, you know, as an actor, you're supposed to be emotionally transparent, but it's amazing that we can all let our walls down and be these, you know, character. I don't know how I'm translating this into words. It's kind of hitting a wall now, but I digress.
It's coming through.
I digress. it's fantastic the way a cast can bond and come together to create this beautiful piece of art that, you know, it's so much work goes into it, but the end product is always so worth it. And I mean, the adrenaline, that's what keeps me coming back is the applause.
Right on. Good answer.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I guess kind of so I can't talk words. I guess pretty similar to Nicole there. I was really shy as, like, kind of a kid. Still am pretty shy sometimes. So, like, in high school I did theater, but really it kicked off a lot when I went to college and, you know, the transition to college can be kind of spooky sometimes. And somehow I knew someone in the theater department here, and they just kind of were like, hey, come hang out with us, do a show backstage, hang out, we like you. And so, I don't know, I guess that doing that kind of, and then being in the shows and seeing the stories and the emotions that are like presented on stage just is really, really powerful. And I guess I just can't see myself doing anything other than theater, and I love it so much, so why not do it, you know?
Preach, girl.
Well, I guess I'll have to say ditto. and I don't remember actually getting into theater at all. I've been performing since I can remember.
Right.
I've been doing shows since I was, you know, 5 years old. And my mom says I'm born to do it, so thanks, Mom.
Yeah, but
but I don't remember getting into it at all. But I do. I know that I've made like the some of the best friends of my life in theater, and it's just such a good community. It's great.
Nice. And I think I remember, Carol, how you got into theater. You told me a long time ago you wanted to be cast as a bluebird, and you weren't.
It's true. It was true. I was a robin. I was resentful. I still sang my part. It's kindergarten.
I have a similar story. I was supposed to be a raccoon, and I got a costume for it and everything, and then they changed it last minute to butterfly, and I was so mad, and I'm still mad.
That's okay. I feel that. There was, I think my first theater experience was in, you know, like the nativity scenes in a, like a church when you're doing that Christmas kind of show for the parents. And so I wanted to be, I think, like an angel or like a narrator. I don't know. Like little me thought that I was like made for stardom. And I was cast as a sheep. And I was really mad about it. I was really mad. But you know what? I took my lines very seriously. I was off book in like a couple days. Yeah. Had those lines memorized. Well, I'm stunned just everybody in that church that day.
I'm so glad that you weren't bad at it.
No.
I don't know, you all want to like do a little scene from the play at all, or
yeah,
just do a little
well, I mean, there's two of us.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. We can go. All right. So I generally just wait until someone comes to get me, or if I hear trumpets. I usually have to go if I hear trumpets. I'm good.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe I'm not good at all. Is it hot in here? Or is that just mortality and sudden lack of sugar and a coffee and a husband? Not a great king, but a man. He's at least a man, you know. Shouldn't need to be great to be spared.
Mm-hmm.
When did it all turn so cruel? Did I do this? You seem honest. Be honest. Is this because of me?
Not exactly.
But did I make it worse? I did, didn't I? Am I too pretty?
Definitely too pretty.
Ugh, I thought so. Maybe if I changed my hair. Or perhaps less bosom?
That would be a public service.
It's always the women who have to do the changing, isn't it?
What did you just say?
Oh, you know, change this, change that. Change your entire personality and allegiance. What about what we want, you know? I could tell you a few things that I would like to change, and they are not my last name. No. For the play, would you write me with different hair? I'd like to do my part for the cause.
I don't think I'm writing a play anymore.
Oh? I thought this was scene one.
It was. And then it wasn't. And then it was, and now it's not again.
That makes sense?
It does, actually. Because we don't write what we know, we write what we want. And you're right, we shouldn't have to change, they should change.
I'm right? Gasp! Sometimes I say it instead of doing it.
Marianne's right. I can't waste my time on a play. A declaration. For the rights of women, I'll just take Thomas Paine's declaration and switch the gender. Yes!
I'm starting to think this might not be okay.
Theater and politics coming together.
You thought they were separate?
I will not only write this declaration, I will declare this declaration.
Wait.
I will go down to the National Assembly myself, and I will stand there and I will tell them exactly...
You're going to the Assembly? In person? On purpose? Girl, hold up. They are awful. They're overrun with Jacobins, like frothy, mean extremists that killed my husband. They will not like this.
Well, what good is a declaration if they already agree?
Yeah, I'm just not seeing this ending well.
It never ends well unless you write the ending yourself. If I have a right to die by their hand, I have a right to speak my mind.
I mean,
and I will.
Sigh.
Nice.
I got tripped up in the middle.
That's right. It sounded fine.
That sounded good. That sounded really good. Oh, very nice. Thank you so much. What would you like people to take from this play?
It's a comedy.
Yeah. A comedy with guillotines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, because sometimes all you got to do is laugh. Yeah. I don't know. Or that's all that's left is laughing.
I think sometimes laughing lets you think.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yep, it does. There's always a little bit of wisdom mixed with laughter.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like I heard it. I think Nietzsche said that once. It's like a day without dancing is not a day. Just like wisdom without laughter is not wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And then Sherman Alexie also said that when he was on campus a few years back. And you could see that within his writing style and also his speaking style, where he would say something really funny and then drop some wisdom right into it. And that's how he rolled the whole presentation, and it was kind of cool. It's like, oh, well, there we go.
Yeah. I think laughter or even theater, you know, putting your politics or points of view into theater is definitely a way for the audience to empathize with your way of view, and it keeps their attention and is making sure, you know, for the most part, I mean, you might have, like, some old guy in the front row dozing off, but, you know, for the most part, the audience is following along and listening, you know, every line, they're with you, and it's not often that you get to hold somebody's attention for so long, so, I mean, it's almost like a filibuster in a way. You can just go off and, you know, I mean, not like go off book, say what you want to say, but, you know, you should definitely, they're listening to you, you know, so you definitely have a platform, and mixing in a little bit of truth or real history in this play is a great way for them to think about, you know, what they know, what they just saw, you know, process it, and maybe do a little digging of their own in some history books, because, I mean, a lot of what Marie says in this show I've found to be actually mostly true. You know, she drops little nuggets of wisdom about herself, little facts about herself that were true. But she also is able to make people listen, because I think Marie's whole goal about, you know, this whole platform thing is just to get people to enjoy life while you live it, you know. And there's different objectives for every character, but I've been thinking about that, and I think that finding the pleasantries in life is okay. Mm-hmm. You know, you can allow yourself to be whimsical or be a little bit frivolous, because life is meant to be enjoyed.
It's funny, I said this once about Greater Tuna. It's true about this play too. Laughter dispels evil.
Yeah,
it does.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, anything else anybody would like to say about anything else?
Please come see our show.
Of course, gotta get that.
We've been working really hard.
Right on. Well, thank you all for dropping in and chatting today.
Thank you for having us.
We've been talking with the cast and crew of The Revolutionists here on The Untold Stories of Central Minnesota. Got actors Jessica Peters and Nicole Cotilla, stage manager Randy LeBeau, and director, costume designer, and faculty advisor Carol Cooley. The Revolutionists will be on the arena stage in the Performing Arts Center at St. Cloud State University, running Wednesday, October 17th through Sunday, October 21st. All shows during the week begin at 7:30, with Sunday's show being a 2 p.m. matinee. For links to ticket information, you can find that on our website at kvsc.org under the Area Events tab, or you can find it under the Podcasts and Untold Stories of Central Minnesota tab and the page for this story. This has been Arts and Cultural Heritage producer Jeff Carmack, and The Untold Stories of Central Minnesota is made possible through support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and has been produced by KVSC, proud member of AMPRS, Diverse Radio for Minnesota's communities.